My name is Michelle O'Roon. I've been carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project in Trafalgar Square. The date today is the 14th of September 2009, and the time is now 1:27 p.m. Could you tell me your name, your age, and where you're from, please?
I'm Jan Fairley. I'm 60, and I'm from Edinburgh. I live in Edinburgh. I'm actually from Birkenhead.
How long have you lived in Edinburgh?
33 years, about. Yeah. My family come from Edinburgh. My granddad was born in Edinburgh, and his family moved down into England during the Depression, I think, looking for work, and they ended up in Birkenhead, in the Camel Edge shipyards.
So what prompted your move?
To come on this?
No, sorry, what prompted your move? Because, you know, you've moved from...
I got married. I was at Oxford. Just finishing, and we decided to, it was a contract for my then husband, and we went up there and I started doing a PhD there, and I've stayed there ever since.
What were you studying at Oxford?
Latin American studies, I'd lived in Chile, which is what I'm going to talk about on the plinth today. I lived in Chile during the Allende years, 1971 to 73, very amazing time culturally. Real dynamic, everybody was engaged. There was it was the first socialist president to be elected through the ballot box, and there was a coup d'etat, and I'm going to remember all the people who died.
What were you doing in Chile?
I was teaching in the university in the south, in Temuco, and it was a fantastic time, lots of wonderful music, new Chilean song, lots of fantastic mural painting, lots of voluntary work, lots of students going and painting, sort of health centres in shanty towns, all that kind of thing. So it's a brilliant time to be there.
Please tell me a bit more about these people.
Well, what I'm going to do is, there was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in 1991, which was the first time, that was after the democracy had been restored, because the military dictatorship lasted until more or less 1988, when Pinochet stood down. You know, then later, of course, he was indicted through the courts. But the Truth and Reconciliation Commission went around the country, a group of lawyers who were seconded from big organisations in Chile, and they went around the country and they sat, and anybody who came to them, who had anybody who had either died or disappeared, obviously only people who had family or friends to come forward, were then, the details of them were then lodged by this committee, and they made this huge report. Later on, there've been a lot more things happening, but I'm just going to remember that first moment, because obviously people who didn't have people to come forward for them are still, you know, not remembered, if you like. But it's actually very emotional for me, because most of these people were very young. I didn't realise I'd be so emotional about it. Most of these people were very young. In their 20s, 30s, some of them in their teens. And
do you know what happened to them?
No, it's not known where they are. There have been, I've actually worked for the BBC and I've made some documentaries about it on the radio, and there have been, they have found bodies and bits of bodies, which they have, through forensic science, have managed to identify people. But mostly the military and the army and the police, they just went on a spree, and they just, you know, basically were very, very brutal. And then there were common graves, there were all sorts of things. It's actually coming out now after the Spanish Civil War. You know, the same man, Baltasar Garzón, the same lawyer who brought Pinochet to trial, he is now acting for families who had people disappeared after the Spanish Civil War. And that's proving to be very controversial at the moment in Spain. Some of the right are trying to take him, they're trying to bring him to court to stop him doing it. In Chile, they have gone through, I had various friends who were imprisoned, various people I taught were disappeared and were lost.
Why were they in prison?
Well, people were just picked up randomly. I mean, basically, if you were sympathetic to the government, it would be exactly the same if there was a coup here now and anybody who'd voted Labour or been on a Labour council or done anything. It was just a completely... After coup d'etats, in those moments, things just... There's no control, there's no order. There's just a lot of kind of spurred up hatred, and people do the most barbaric things because they've got ideas in their mind that are totally kind of crazy, really. Because obviously, you know, not many of these people, what did they know? Who did they know? They did try to get networks, you know, who knew who, and people who sheltered people who were on lists. If you'd been a student leader or a trade union leader or obviously active in politics or that, there were lists of people. I mean, I actually was myself being looked for. I lived in Temuco, and after they said that all foreigners had entered the country to teach Marxism, I actually went in through a British Council scholarship, a British Council job, really, through the United Nations Association, and I was just a university teacher. But after the coup, people said, you know, denounce foreigners. So there were people who were looking for me from the Fatherland and Freedom Party, which was an extreme right-wing sort of death squad group. And they came to the place where I lived, and I was luckily somewhere else. There was a curfew, but we had a few hours without the curfew, and I was somewhere else, and we received a call not to come back.
Do you know who called you?
Yeah, the people who owned the house. They took this guy out at gunpoint, these guys, but he was very, very strong, and also actually he was kind of supporting the coup, so he kind of said, where are your papers, what are you doing here? You know, what right have you got to have a, you know, are you a member? And when they said no, he said, well, don't come back until you're official. So it was all very random. Anybody, I mean, like literally anybody could be eliminated, and no one was, you know, that's what happens. It happened in Argentina, it happened in Uruguay. I think it goes on happening. But all of those people had lives. And what I want to try and do today, if I don't get too emotional, is I want to celebrate the fact that they did have lives. And until that moment when their life was taken away from them, they probably loved their lives. And they'd have had 36 more years today if they'd lived. So the idea, I'm going to read poems, but I'm going to read poems that people have suggested to me. So I'm going to say things like, you know, Lizzie sent me this poem to read. And then I'm going to name somebody who died and then read the poem. So I'm trying to sort of bring together all those who are alive and living and loving life with those who did love life but are no longer alive. And by remembering them, I think that it's only by remembering them that they will continue to live.
Have you been back to Chile?
Yeah, quite a lot of times, yeah. I've taught there and that, yeah. It's a beautiful country, Chile. It's absolutely beautiful, beautiful country. It's everything everybody says. It's a very long, thin country. It's right on the edge of South America. It's the backbone of the Andes. So where I lived in the south, when you look out the window, you do see snow-capped volcanoes. Although whether they're snow-capped now, I haven't been for a few years, since 2005, but I suspect that's all changing with global warming. But they're... it's a beautiful country. It's desert in the north and it's lakes in the south, and then you get right down to the Antarctic. And it's just beautiful.
Was it radically different when you went back to visit again?
Well, it was a lot of people had left. I mean, if you're talking about a whole generation of people being wiped out, and the ones that weren't wiped out went into exile. And, you know, people had very broken lives. When I first went back, I was teaching in the university in Santiago. I am a musicologist. And it was grey. People were grey. They didn't talk to each other. They didn't communicate. It was kind of general paranoia, really. People kept themselves to themselves. But now it's, you know, it's really recovered. There's lots of, there's a whole new generation. And in fact, lots of people I've interviewed there, like I remember filmmaker Andres Wood once saying that, you know, it's only when there's a generation, when that this generation's gone that knew what it was. And there's a new generation that things will sort of right themselves in a way. They have done everything they can, I think, in Chile to come to terms with it. I mean, a friend of mine who was tortured and kept in a dreadful situation, and most of the people where she was taken didn't come out alive. She has met the person who picked her up in a, you know, she has seen this person and got and been in court, and then she actually bumped into him in the supermarket. So, and in her mind, I think people come, you know, they have to themselves come to a place where they don't want vengeance in a way that doesn't make them ruin their life, you know. I mean, she's gone on, she's an actress, she was an actress then, she was a theatre student, and she's gone on to do amazing things. But, you know, so many didn't.
What was it about this project, the One Another project, do you think that appealed to you?
Well, I love Anthony Gormley, I love The Angel of the North, I love Crosby Beach, I've been there several times. I know one of his nieces. And I just love the physicality of everything that he does. And I just thought it was a brilliant idea. And honestly, I went on the site and I had no intent. I just went on the site to look, and then it said, you know, put your name in the ballot. And I just thought, oh, well, I must put it in, because, you know, I remember once winning a lottery winner, and he said, you'll never win the lottery if you don't buy a lottery ticket. And I thought, oh, well, I'll never get a place on the plinth unless I put my name in. But I didn't expect to, so I was really a bit taken aback. And I had no idea what I was going to do. And then I suddenly thought, oh God, it's September the 14th. That's like just after the anniversary of the coup, and it's just before Chile's National Day, the 18th, which is really festive. So I thought, I have to do something for Chile, to remember Chile, because that's been the most kind of significant thing in my life, really. And so, I will.
You're a musicologist?
Yeah.
Would you like to...
I'm actually an ethnomusicologist, I'm an anthropologist of music, and that's, I got into that in Chile. I was always very musical, and I was kind of thinking I might do something when I came back, and there was a big song movement in Chile, the New Song Movement, and in fact the leading singer of that movement was killed after the coup. He was killed in the Chile Stadium. Victor Jara, in fact, Peter Gabriel and Bruce Springsteen and everybody have did it when they did the Amnesty International tour. In the 80s, they did a big thing about him, and people have written songs about him and sing his songs. And I knew his wife is British, Joan Jara. So I met lots of musicians when I was there, and when I came back, I decided to go and do Latin American studies at Oxford. So I decided to do my thesis on the new Chilean song movement. And so I kind of got into being more of an anthropologist and ethnographic and sort of observing things and that, and writing about them and writing those histories. And then I eventually went on tour. I did a PhD in Edinburgh, and I went on tour with a group of Chilean exile musicians, one of whom, that woman had gone in. There were 120 people were taken when she went in, and only 60 people came out alive. And she was a composer. And this group went, toured Britain, they were called Caraxu, and they raised money to try and support a resistance in Chile. And they wrote beautiful songs and did amazing performances. And they just did it for a period of years. They were all sort of theatre and music students. And then they stopped later. And at that time, there were people who had come into exile from Chile, because there was a big... support infrastructure through World University Service, and they went back to fight in the so-called resistance, and they died. Young people who thought, and the resistance, you know, meant more or less publicity and propaganda and just trying to give people an idea that you could resist the military, but most of them were lost. They got picked up, you know. People were paranoid and gave people away, and so that's how I became a musicologist. And now I do world music. I write for Songlines magazine. I had a BBC radio programme for quite a few years. I've done lots of radio, and I write about music. I'm about to go to Cuba, to Havana, for the big, they're going to have this big Peace Without Frontiers concert in the Plaza de la Revolución, which is unbelievable to have a foreign Colombian. Juanes is going to sing there. I've interviewed him. And he's going to sing in the Plaza Revolución with Cuban musicians who I've worked with. So that's going to be a groundbreaking moment.
When is this happening?
On the 20th of September.
Mm. Is it a busy time for you at the moment?
Well, I was 60 this year. And gosh, I'm talking too much. I was 60 this year. I had cancer 5 years ago. And so that was my 5 year thing. So it's been a brilliant year. I've had, you know, I had a big party. I had a ceilidh to celebrate. I'm on the plinth. A lot of other good things have happened to me this year. It's like a lot of good things have happened. Just kind of, it's a good year.
Did you choose 3 words to describe yourself on your profile?
I think I said passionate, dynamic. I can't remember the other one. Can't remember what it is. Yeah, I think those words kind of describe me. I'm a bit of a, I think my children find me slightly out of control as a mother, not doing mummy kind of things.
Did you ever do mummy kind of things?
No, never. No, because actually when I came back from Chile, I said I would never have children. I was so grim. It was so scary. I thought it was a terrible world to bring children into. But of course, you've got to fight back.
Where are your children now?
One of them is out there, Rachel. She's just pregnant. She's 33. And Tom, my son, can't come. He's 30. He's a winemaker. And Fran, my daughter, who's 27, about to be this week, is a primary school teacher. So they may be watching the webcam. I'm going to read a Beatles song for them.
Which one?
Here Comes the Sun. I'm going to read that, and I've named two men who were killed, one of whom had 11 children and one of whom had 5. So I thought that was kind of appropriate, as Fran's a primary school teacher, but to remember that lots of people lost their dads.
Describe what you're wearing for me.
Yeah, I'm wearing a lovely, I think it must be Indian, gold jacket with lots of flowers on it, because I wanted to look really cheerful and celebratory and kind of as beautiful as I could, because I wanted to think about those lives being beautiful.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, I think I've probably said enough. I'm really excited. I'm very nervous and I'm feeling quite emotional.
What are you nervous about?
Whether I'll manage to say it all without getting tearful. But I know there'll be some mates down there, and I've got a megaphone, which I've got to get the battery in. And
you haven't used a megaphone?
No, but I tried it last night. It's a bit noisy. I've got a cape I've made, which says "Remember the Disappeared," which I'm going to put on. And then in the middle, I'm hoping that I'm going to put a poncho on, and I'm going to do this silent cueca solo with a tambourine, which is what the women used to do in Chile. After the women who lost their husbands and sons, the people in the shanty towns all banded together, and they had these kind of common soup pots, because they really had nothing. And they organized in the community. And the national dance of Chile is called the cueca, and it's a couple dance, and the couple sort of circle around each other. And it's a classic traditional dance, and it's even danced in Peru and Bolivia. And that's what will be danced on the 18th, the 18. And the women who lost their partners danced it alone. It was called the Cueca Sola. And in fact, that's when Sting wrote that song, They Dance Alone. It was based on his knowledge of that. So I'm going to read some of La Cueca Sola of Sting, and I'm going to, I hope, just with my tambourine, just circle the plinth a bit, doing a cueca sola. If my nerves let me.
Best of luck with it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.